You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I am joined by my Washington National Tax colleague, Ruth Madrigal, a principal in our exempt organizations tax team. Welcome, Ruth.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And today we're going to talk about a new provision from this summer's OB3 legislation, and that is the charitable contribution limitation on deductions for corporations. Now, historically, charitable deductions were only limited by an upper end, meaning corporations couldn't deduct more than 10% of taxable income, and contributions over this limit were available for carry forward. But starting in 2026, I think that's all going to change. So, Ruth, why don't we start at the beginning? Tell us about the new provision.
Yep, you're right. It is going to change starting for tax years that begin after the end of 2025. And what Congress did was change Section 170B2, which is the provision allowing a deduction for charitable contributions for corporations. And now it has both a 1% of taxable income floor and a 10% of taxable income ceiling. So that's what's new.
Is there a reason for the change? It feels like it's been the same forever.
It's been the same for as long as I've been practicing, which is practically forever. And there wasn't much explanation of the provision. I know that there were some budgetary pressures to pay for some of the tax cuts. And so perhaps this is one of those base broadening provisions that helped offset some of the individual tax cuts. It effectively lowers the amount of deductions, so increases taxes somewhat, because now a taxpayer will not get a deduction unless the amount of total aggregate contributions to charities exceeds 1% of their taxable income. So there's going to be a disallowance of everything below that floor.
So if we think about that disallowance, that it really becomes a perm difference, because it's essentially a haircut at 1% of taxable income, whatever taxable income happens to be in that year. I think there's some mechanics here. If we can get into the math for a second, I mean, we've got the 1% floor, the 10% ceiling, and we get to carry forward. Is all of that really clear, or are we waiting on guidance on how some of that works?
Yeah, we're really waiting on guidance. The statute says that a charitable contribution that's otherwise allowable is only allowed to the extent that the aggregate of the contributions, one, exceeds 1% of the taxpayer's taxable income for the year, and two, does not exceed 10% of the taxpayer's taxable income for the year. And there are at least a couple of ways to read that. One way to read it is that you can get a charitable contribution deduction once you exceed that 1% floor and up to the 10% of taxable income limitation. So a total of 10% of your taxable income. But to get that, you would have to give 11% because there would be the 1% haircut below the floor. The second way that you could interpret that would be that you get the deduction to the extent of the difference between 10% of taxable income and a 1% floor, which would give you a max deduction of 9% of taxable income. Those are questions that I think the statute is amenable to a read both ways. And I've heard a couple of other ways that I think aren't particularly good when you read them in light of the carry forward provision. So I think we're waiting on guidance to see exactly how this shakes out. But I do want to mention that carry forward provision. That was another change in the statute that provides that if a taxpayer donates more than is deductible in that year, more than that 10% limit, then the amounts over that limit and the amount under the floor can all be carried forward and treated as contributions in the next taxable year. And so that has the effect of turning that 1% amount under the floor. It pushes the haircut into the next tax year.
Can you explain that a little bit more, Ruth? Is the haircut only once, or is there a chance that a deduction gets that 1% haircut additional times?
No, the statute only provides for that haircut to hit a set of contributions once. So if you make a contribution that exceeds that 10% of taxable income limit, let's say you contributed 15% to charities of your taxable income in the tax year, you would exceed the 10% limit. And the statute now provides that the amounts over the 10% limit, as well as the amount under the 1% floor, get carried over to the next tax year and treated as contributions in that tax year. So in tax year number two, if you made no other contributions, you would carry over the five that were not deducted, let's say, and then a haircut would be applied in year two of the 1%, and you would deduct 4% of the taxable income in that year. So if you made a great big contribution, it's only subject to a haircut once, even if you have to carry over to future years to take advantage of the full amount.
So it strikes me that the interplay with taxable income, because we're pegging off of that each year and that can change, that there's a bit of a forecasting and modeling exercise here to try to get the most out of a charitable contribution.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case if you have variable income. If you have a situation where income doesn't vary very much, then it's easy to plan. But if your income is variable and, you know, maybe low or maybe a loss in one year and maybe very high another year, you definitely should be thinking about how your charitable contribution deduction would work. Especially if you've got carry forwards, for example, to a year with a higher net income, you would have a higher 1% threshold. But the 1% threshold that you have to get over and below which you lose the deduction travels at the same time with the 10% of income limitation. So I think it makes it hard to spot it, just sort of trying to eyeball it. And I absolutely agree that modeling would be helpful if you're going to have variable income and a large amount of charitable contributions.
Yeah, and actually over the next couple of years, I can see some of that with the 174 changes and other method changes. I think there could be in the banking industry some big pieces of income moving around. So definitely something to consider and model. And I think another planning opportunity, if I think about it, would be bunching in the future. Right? Because if you are somewhere between 1 and 10% of taxable income on your contributions annually, maybe you do a larger contribution that kind of covers a couple years and then you only get that haircut once.
So absolutely, bunching in the future is a strategy, but also bunching in the now. Right now, before the end of 2025, there's an opportunity to make contributions without the haircut of the 1% floor. So I think we will be seeing a number of organizations that are regular charitable givers making a couple of years worth of contributions and then making the contributions to a company foundation or perhaps a donor advised fund, and then having that entity then continue the giving over the next couple of years, so that for the charities that are used to receiving a specific amount annually from the corporation, they can have this be a bit transparent and still receive their annual gifts, but it would be coming from the company foundation or from a donor advised fund.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, because I think on the other side of this, bunching on contributions directly to charities could impact the way they fund and forecast things.
Absolutely. And most charities that corporations are giving to have annual programs and an annual budget that doesn't vary widely. And it would be, I think, pretty disturbing for them from a financial perspective if all of a sudden their revenues were quite volatile. And so one strategy to help keep their expectations level and meet their budget needs as they have them is to make the contribution to a company foundation, for example, and have the company foundation's giving spread out over a couple of years. And in fact, that is something that many corporations have done for years when they have been matching their charitable contribution amounts to their taxable income, making bigger contributions in years where income was larger and smaller contributions when their income was not as high.
That makes sense. And I do think there are a lot of foundations and donor advised funds in the banking space, and those strategies are going to make a lot of sense, certainly accelerating into 2025 to avoid any haircut at all is good tax planning.
Absolutely.
Ruth, I want to shift gears slightly and talk about the difference between a deduction under 162 versus 170. So 170 is a charitable contribution deduction. But it seems to me that previously it might not have mattered whether the deduction fell under a charitable contribution or 162 necessary business expense if a bank was paying for a sponsorship or something. But now that difference could be meaningful.
Yeah, that's true. As long as you weren't bumping up against the 10% of income ceiling, I don't think folks gave much thought to which deductibility bucket the amount went into, because people were pretty much indifferent, though they are two very different deduction provisions. With 170, you get a deduction for a contribution to a charity, but only if you do not receive significant benefits in return. And for 162, the deduction, you have to receive commensurate benefit in return for your payment for that to be an ordinary and necessary business expense. And so technically they're very different contributions, but in practice, sometimes there can be an area of a little bit of ambiguity. You mentioned, say, sponsorships, where the charity acknowledges the corporation's gift in some way. That is treated for 170 purposes as an incidental and tenuous benefit that doesn't really reduce the amount of the contribution. Not the same way that when you receive something of value, like the dinner that has to be deducted from the amount of the contribution. We all know, though, that it can be very valuable for a corporation to have their name connected to the charity's sort of good aura, or to have their customers and clients recognize that they are active in the community. And oftentimes that will create a positive impression of the company. So that is a benefit that has been kind of ignored in the 170 space.
And I think about the advertising as well. Like sometimes there could be a bit of advertising that goes along with the sponsorship.
It would have to stay within some certain limits for the charity, or the charity will have to pay an unrelated business income tax on advertising. So typically what you see at some of these events is that what would be advertising from the company's perspective is a mere acknowledgement on the charity's side. So it would be the company's name on the back of the Little League uniforms, or acknowledgement in a program or on a sign at the event, or other such things that can be treated from the charity's perspective as an acknowledgement of the gift, and treated perhaps from the corporation's perspective as advertising. I think the key here for the corporation is going to be documenting what the purpose of the gift was and how the corporation is thinking about this. And on the charity side, sticking within the rules for what is advertising for purposes of unrelated business income.
Yeah, I can see the fine line there. And it will become very important to document contemporaneously what the corporation bank sponsor is intending to get out of the arrangement.
That is absolutely the case, because that is fundamentally the difference, I think, sometimes between these two potential deductions. What are you intending to do? Are you intending to benefit the charity without a return benefit? Or are you making this payment with the expectation of the benefits equal to the amount paid? And those benefits could come in the form of goodwill advertising. There, that is recognized in regulations under 162 and in IRS guidance as a real form of advertising. Even though the payment looks like just cash to a charity, whether you're making a charitable contribution or a payment for goodwill advertising, let's say, it's the check going to the charity looks the same. So the difference when the IRS agent shows up and asks you about it is what you have in your folder as documentation of what you expected to get out of that payment and why you expected it.
Again, we see a lot of times that it comes down to documentation. That's a really helpful discussion. And I know we mentioned the need for guidance on some of the carry forward and how that works. And maybe there'll be some guidance around this 162-170 area too, so that people know some guardrails to stay between. Are we expecting that, and when?
Well, it's funny you ask, because I just saw late last night that Treasury has released a new priority guidance plan. And I did not see on their guidance about the 170 deduction. I just skimmed it. So to be fair, I might have missed it in there. It's organized a little differently than it's been organized in past years. But I did see a section where there are a lot of items of guidance around the OB3 legislation. And there are a lot of things for Treasury to do. And so I think any particular guidance program, it has got a lot of stiff competition, and I don't know how much manpower they're going to have for this. I hope very much that they get to the question of how to read the 1% floor and the 10% limit together, which impacts how much of a carry forward folks get. I think that would be a top priority, as I've seen different reputable folks take different positions on that. And I will note that there was some new guidance around this area of a 162 deduction that was put out in final regulations around 2020-ish in the wake of some of the changes from the TCJA. And so the regulations are actually more clear than they were for many, many years about the potential for corporations to take a 162 deduction for things like goodwill advertising.
Oh, that's helpful. I want to ask one more question about some OB3 changes that's slightly related but slightly not. And that is, there was also some excise tax changes for the foundation itself that I think has the potential to impact banks that have their own foundations.
That's true. For any for-profit entity that's related to a tax exempt, and there's an excise tax that hits tax exempt organizations. And that excise tax applies to compensation paid to employees, including payments made by related for-profit and nonprofit entities. So if you have a situation, which is quite common, where a company employee performs services for the company foundation, perhaps as part of their job for the company, and the company's donating their time to the foundation. So the foundation may not be paying that employee anything directly, but the related company is paying the employee that is performing services for the foundation. This 4960 excise tax can hit all of that employee's compensation, and the tax would be due proportionately by the company and the company foundation in the proportion that the compensation is paid. There was a change there that broadens the number of covered employees to whom the tax would apply to their salaries. But I think that might be a bigger topic that I'd be happy yes. to talk about.
Well, and yes, you took the words out of my mouth, because I do want to have you back to talk about that. I just wanted to raise it as a, you know, a heads up that there's some changes there, and definitely a lot of details and nuances that we will talk through on another podcast.
That sounds great. I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you, Ruth, for joining me today. This has been really insightful. I hope our audience thinks about some of the strategies, acceleration, bunching, and then also we got to stay informed as the guidance evolves and make sure we get the latest on the charitable contribution deduction limitation. So thank you, everyone, for joining me today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.